Chapter 23. Accompanies Mr. Pecksniff and his charming daughters to the City of London, and relates what fell out upon their way thither, when Mr. Pecksniff and the two young ladies got into the heavy coach at the end of the lane. They found it empty, which was a great comfort, particularly as the outside was quite full, and the passengers looked very frosty. For as Mr. Pecksniff justly observed, when he and his daughters had burrowed their feet deep in the straw, wrapped themselves to the chin, and pulled up both windows, it is always satisfactory to feel, in keen weather, that many other people are not as warm as you are. And this, he said, was quite natural, and a very beautiful arrangement, not confined to coaches, but extending itself into many social ramifications. For, he observed, if everyone were warm and well-fed, we should lose the satisfaction of admiring the fortitude with which certain conditions of men bear cold and hunger. And if we were no better off than anybody else, what would become of our sense of gratitude? Which, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff with tears in his eyes, as he shook his fist at a beggar who wanted to get up behind, is one of the holiest feelings of our common nature. Apostrophe, his children heard with becoming reverence these moral precepts from the lips of their father, and signified their acquiescence in the same, by smiles, that he might the better feed and cherish that sacred flame of gratitude in his breast. Mr. Pecksniff remarked that he would trouble his eldest daughter, even in this early stage of their journey, for the brandy bottle. And from the narrow neck of that stone vessel he imbibed a copious refreshment. What are we? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff. But coaches? Some of us are slow coaches, goodness, pa. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Charity. Some of us, I say, apostrophe, resumed her parent with increased emphasis, are slow coaches. Some of us are fast coaches. Our passions are the horses, and rampant animals too. Apostrophe, apostrophe, really, pa, apostrophe, cried both the daughters at once. How very unpleasant. Apostrophe, and rampant animals too, repeated Mr. Pecksniff with so much determination, that he may be said to have exhibited, at the moment, a sort of moral rampancy himself. Apostrophe, and virtue is the drag. We start from the mother's arms, and we run to the dust shovel. Apostrophe, when he had said this, Mr. Pecksniff, being exhausted, took some further refreshment. When he had done that, he corked the bottle tight, with the air of a man who had effectually corked the subject also, and went to sleep for three stages. The tendency of mankind, when it falls asleep in coaches, is to wake up cross, to find its legs in its way, and its corns an aggravation. Mr. Pecksniff, not being exempt from the common lot of humanity, found himself, at the end of his nap, so decidedly the victim of these infirmities, that he had an irresistible inclination to visit them upon his daughters, which he had already begun to do in the shape of divers random kicks, and other unexpected motions of his shoes, when the coach stopped, and after a short delay the door was opened. Now mind, apostrophe, said a thin sharp voice in the dark. I and my son go inside, because the roof is full, but you agree only to charge us outside prices. It's quite understood that we won't pay more. Is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, all right, sir, apostrophe, replied the guard. Is there anybody inside now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired the voice. Three passengers, apostrophe, returned the guard. Then I ask the three passengers to witness this bargain, if they will be so good, apostrophe, said the voice. My boy, I think we may safely get in. Apostrophe, in pursuance of which opinion, two people took their seats in the vehicle, which was solemnly licensed by Act of Parliament, to carry any six persons who could be got in at the door. That was lucky. Apostrophe, apostrophe, whispered the old man, when they moved on again. And a great stroke of policy in you to observe it. He. We couldn't have gone outside. I should have died of the rheumatism. Apostrophe, whether it occurred to the dutiful son, that he had in some degree overreached himself, by contributing to the prolongation of his father's days, or whether the cold had affected his temper, is doubtful. But he gave his father such a nudge in reply, that that good old gentleman was taken with a cough which lasted for full 5 minutes without intermission, and goaded Mr. Pecksniff to that pitch of irritation, that he said at last and very suddenly, "There is no room. There is really no room in this coach for any gentleman with a cold in his head." Apostrophe, apostrophe, mine, apostrophe, said the old man, after a moment's pause, is upon my chest, Pecksniff. Apostrophe, the voice and manner, together, now that he spoke out, the composure of the speaker, the presence of his son, and his knowledge of Mr. Pecksniff, afforded a clue to his identity which it was impossible to mistake. Hem. I thought, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, returning to his usual mildness, that I addressed a stranger. I find that I address a relative, Mr. Anthony Chuzzlewit and his son Mr. Jonas, for they, my dear children, are our traveling companions. Will excuse me for an apparently harsh remark. It is not my desire to wound the feelings of any person with whom I am connected in family bonds. I may be a hypocrite, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, cuttingly, but I am not a brute. Apostrophe, pooh, pooh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old man. What signifies that word, Pecksniff? Hypocrite. Why, we are all hypocrites. We were all hypocrites t'other day. I am sure I felt that to be agreed upon among us, or I shouldn't have called you one. We should not have been there at all, if we had not been hypocrites. The only difference between you and the rest was, shall I tell you the difference between you and the rest now, Pecksniff? Apostrophe, apostrophe, if you please, my good sir, if you please. Apostrophe, why, the annoying quality in you is, apostrophe, said the old man, that you never have a confederate or partner in your juggling. You would deceive everybody, even those who practice the same art, and have away with you, as if you as if you really believed yourself. I'd lay a handsome wager now, apostrophe, said the old man, if I laid wagers, which I don't and never did, that you keep up appearances by a tacit understanding, even before your own daughters here. Now I, when I have a business scheme in hand, tell Jonas what it is, and we discuss it openly. You're not offended, Pecksniff? Apostrophe, offended, my good sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried that gentleman, as if he had received the highest compliments that language could convey. Are you traveling to London, Mr. Pecksniff? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the son. Yes, Mr. Jonas, we are traveling to London. We shall have the pleasure of your company all the way, I trust. Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh. Ecod, you had better ask father that, apostrophe, said Jonas. I am not a-going to commit myself. Apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff was, as a matter of course, greatly entertained by this retort. His mirth having subsided, Mr. Jonas gave him to understand that himself and parent were in fact traveling to their home in the metropolis, and that, since the memorable day of the great family gathering, they had been tarrying in that part of the country, watching the sale of certain eligible investments, which they had had in their co-partnership by when they came down. For it was their custom, Mr. Jonas said, whenever such a thing was practicable, to kill two birds with one stone, and never to throw away sprats, but as bait for whales. When he had communicated to Mr. Pecksniff these pithy scraps of intelligence, he said that if it was all the same to him, he would turn him over to father, and have a chat with the gals. Apostrophe, and in furtherance of this polite scheme, he vacated his seat adjoining that gentleman, and established himself in the opposite corner, next to the fair Miss Mercy. The education of Mr. Jonas had been conducted from his cradle on the strictest principles of the main chance. The very first word he learned to spell was gain, apostrophe, and the second, when he got into two syllables, money. apostrophe but for two results, which were not clearly foreseen perhaps by his watchful parent in the beginning, his training may be said to have been unexceptionable. One of these flaws was, that having been long taught by his father to overreach everybody, he had imperceptibly acquired a love of overreaching, that venerable monitor himself. The other, that from his early habits of considering everything as a question of property, he had gradually come to look, with impatience, on his parent as a certain amount of personal estate, which had no right, whatever to be going at large, but ought to be secured in, that particular description of iron safe which is commonly called a coffin, and banked in the grave. Well, cousin, said Mr. Jonas, because we are cousins, you know, a few times removed, so you're going to London? Miss Mercy replied in the affirmative, pinching her sister's arm at the same time, and giggling excessively. Lots of beaux in London, cousin. Said Mr. Jonas, slightly advancing his elbow. Indeed, sir. Cried the young lady. They won't hurt us, sir, I dare say. And having given him this answer with great demureness, she was so overcome by her own humor that she was fain to stifle her merriment in her sister's shawl. Mary, cried that more prudent damsel, really I am ashamed of you. How can you go on so? You wild thing! At which Miss Mary only laughed the more, of course. I saw a wildness in her eye, t'other day, said Mr. Jonas, addressing Charity. But you're the one to sit solemn. I say you were regularly prim, cousin. Oh, the old-fashioned fright. Cried Mary, in a whisper. Cherry, my dear, upon my word you must sit next him. I shall die outright, if he talks to me any more. I shall, positively. To prevent which fatal consequence, the buoyant creature skipped out of her seat as she spoke, and squeezed her sister into the place from which she had risen. Don't mind crowding me, cried Mr. Jonas. I like to be crowded by gals. Come a little closer, cousin. No, thank you, sir, said Charity. There's that other one a laughing again, said Mr. Jonas. She's a laughing at my father, I shouldn't wonder. If he puts on that old flannel nightcap of his, I don't know what she'll do. Is that my father a snoring, Pecksniff? Yes, Mr. Jonas. Tread upon his foot, will you be so good? Said the young gentleman. The foot next is the gouty one. Mr. Pecksniff hesitating, to perform this friendly office, Mr. Jonas did it himself, at the same time crying. Come, wake up, father, or you'll be having the nightmare, and screeching out, I know. Do you ever have the nightmare, cousin? He asked his neighbor, with characteristic gallantry, as he dropped his voice again. Sometimes, answered Charity. Not often. The other one, said Mr. Jonas, after a pause. Does she ever have the nightmare? I don't know, replied Charity. You had better ask her. She laughs so, said Jonas. There's no talking to her. Only hark how she's a going on now. You're the sensible one, cousin. Tut, tut. Cried Charity. Oh, but you are. You know you are. Mercy is a little giddy, said Miss Charity. But she'll sober down in time. It'll be a very long time then, if she does at all, rejoined her cousin. Take a little more room. I am afraid of crowding you, said Charity. But she took it notwithstanding. And after one or two remarks on the extreme heaviness of the coach, and the number of places it stopped at, they fell into a silence which remained unbroken by any member of the party until supper time. Although Mr. Jonas conducted Charity to the hotel and sat himself beside her at the board, it was pretty clear that he had an eye to the other one also, for he often glanced across at Mercy and seemed to draw comparisons between the personal appearance of the two, which were not unfavorable to the superior plumpness of the younger sister. He allowed himself no great leisure for this kind of observation, however, being busily engaged with the supper, which, as he whispered in his fair companion's ear, was a contract business, and therefore the more she ate, the better the bargain was. His father and Mr. Pecksniff, probably acting on the same wise principle, demolished everything that came within their reach, and by that means, acquired a greasy expression of countenance, indicating contentment, if not repletion, which it was very pleasant to contemplate. When they could eat no more, Mr. Pecksniff and Mr. Jonas subscribed for 2 sixpenny-worths of hot brandy and water, which the latter gentleman considered a more politic order than 1 shilling's worth. There being a chance of their getting more spirit out of the innkeeper under this arrangement than if it were all in one glass. Having swallowed his share of the enlivening fluid, Mr. Pecksniff, under pretense of going to see if the coach were ready, went secretly to the bar and had his own little bottle filled in order that he might refresh himself at leisure in the dark coach without being observed. These arrangements concluded, and the coach being ready, they got into their old places and jogged on again. But before he composed himself for a nap, Mr. Pecksniff delivered a kind of grace after meat, in these words: "The process of digestion, as I have been informed by anatomical friends, is one of the most wonderful works of nature. I do not know how it may be with others, but it is a great satisfaction to me to know, when regaling on my humble fare, that I am putting in motion the most beautiful machinery with which we have any acquaintance. I really feel at such times as if I was doing a public service. When I have wound myself up, if I may employ such a term," apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff with exquisite tenderness, "and know that I am going, I feel that in the lesson afforded by the works within me, I am a benefactor to my kind." ... As nothing could be added to this, nothing was said. And Mr. Pecksniff, exulting, it may be presumed, in his moral utility, went to sleep again. The rest of the night wore away in the usual manner. Mr. Pecksniff and old Anthony kept tumbling against each other and waking up much terrified, or crushed their heads in opposite corners of the coach. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.